All right, so we're going to start with a review because all this is really important. The things that have come before are so essential for us to build on. So in week one, we talked about God's heart, God's truth, and the fact that all of this rests upon the foundation of a God with an incredible heart toward every single one of us. And that's one of those truths we've got to own on the inside. And then we also talked about the three voices that are speaking related to truth. Anybody remember what those three voices were? Your voices, the voices in your head. That's what I call them. There's the voices in my head telling me all this stuff about what's really true in the world. And then there's another voice. Our culture of the world. They're just speaking everywhere, constantly coming in and telling us about, quote, truth. And then what's the third voice?
God's word.
God himself has spoken. And you and I need to be really clear that there's only one place we're going to get truth. God's word. Every other voice is confused. Every other voice is down the wrong road, and we can tell it. Just look at the fruit. Okay, week two. We talked about God is, what was the point from week two? God is relationship. Yeah, and what kind of relationship? He's a what? He's a complementary. What would be another word in there? Complementary? Love relationship. What was our whole phrase? I think it was an infinitely loving, irreversibly complementary role relationship. That's God. Okay? That's what's going on up there. That's who he has always been, who he will always be, and that's what he loves to be. That's what is good. And so when we think about some implications of that, we talked about authority and submission in it. Is that good or bad? What does your heart say? What does your heart step into? What does your heart go, wow, this is what I embrace? Where are you at with that? What's God's perspective on authority and submission?
It's necessary for growth.
Necessary for growth. Absolutely. It's a beautiful reflection of who he is. That even God himself, who is not growing, who is not changing, but this is where he lives. This is what he is. And this is what he loves. And this is what good flows through. Now, of course, in our world, as fallen people, it gets all messed up. But in the perfection of what God made it to be, it is the very, very best way to find life and experience life and be in life. Okay, then week three. We were made by God. And an incredible implication here is that there's something going on. You are part of some plan, some purpose. There's somebody has a thought, has an idea, has a whole thing laid out here, and I was created to be part of it. That there's some purpose that I myself I don't make it up, I don't decide it, I'm already in it. It's like, whoa, okay, somebody's got a plan here, and I'm somehow made to be part of it. And that has profound implications for how I decide lots of things about my own life. So I'm made in the image of God. And from this, we got the idea of equality. And why does that relate to equality? I'm going to make you guys do jumping jacks. Because of the Trinity? Yeah. So why do we know that myself and Megan or Heather are equal? I mean, I'm a man, and they're just a woman. They're just a woman. What?
Made in the image of God.
We're both made in the image of God. I cannot say that with any authority. I cannot say that in any kind of differentiating way that has anything to do with ultimate value, because I know truth tells me that there is something profound about human life. Human life is made in the image of God. And I share that with every single person, regardless of the gender, regardless of their race, regardless of their age, regardless of their health. Every human life is God's business. Every human life will have their moment in front of him. Every human life has to be respected because of that. That's why in our own country we have the notion of a freedom of conscience. Why can you have conscientious objectors in the army? The reason you can have conscientious objectors in the army is because our country recognizes that we all have to live in our conscience before God. We will all stand before God. I cannot get in the way of that for you. I must grant you that right to follow your conscience before God, because you will give your account to Him. You're made in His image. We all share that, and we respect that in one another. That's part of our culture. And it comes from the Bible. Okay? So that's... And nobody else has that. No one else has a basis to say that we're equal. We also didn't quite get to thoroughly talk this through. We're made male and female as the image of God's plurality. And I want to read my Bible. I want to read this section out of Genesis just to... bring it all into our mind, and if you want to open up a Bible to Genesis chapter 1, I just want to reload all this for us. Just for grins, I'll just read it all. I'm going to start in verse 1 here, and I'm reading the NIV. I don't know where you're at, but it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, 'Let there be light.' And there was light. God saw that the light was good, and He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, 'Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water.' So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it. And it was so. God called the expanse sky. And there was evening, and there was morning, the second day. And God said, 'Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear.' And it was so. And God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters He called seas, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, 'Let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants and trees on the land that bear fruit with seed in it, according to their various kinds.' And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, 'Let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth.' And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and night, to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, 'Let the water teem with living creatures. Let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky.' So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing which with water teems according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them and said, 'Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth.' And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, 'Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind.' And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds,
and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. Let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. And so in that, we could unwrap a lot of things there, and we could discover that the way God made man, we catch a little bit of it even in a single reading, is really, really different than everything else. Every other thing, as I mentioned before, God said, let there be, let there be. And when he comes to his own image, he says, let us make. Let us make. God himself personally involved in the creation of what you are. Human life is unique. So God made male and female as the image of God's plurality. Let us make man in our image. So in the image of God, he made him male and female. He made them. Gender is something created as God's way to express the us dimension of his nature. And when we reach this point, we now are right where our culture is wrestling. Because one thing that is very hard to find anywhere else, just like a basis for equality, is a basis for gender. 71 genders in Facebook. Somewhere in some boardroom, just I think a year and a half ago, there's 51. So they just recently added another 20. How do you know how many genders there are? And we can perhaps be really, really critical of that kind of thing, or at least have a tendency that way. But somewhere there's people sitting in some boardroom going, I don't know, anybody know anything about gender? Anybody know how many genders there are? Anybody know what gender is? And they're all sitting around going, I don't know, Puggy said, I don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't know. Well, gee, you know, people are kind of thinking they like more. I think it could be good. Well, anybody have any idea what it is? No, I don't know. Well, then let's have more. They don't have any reason not to. And the question is there a basis for what gender is? Or has thousands of years of history just all been wrong and confused, where people have always thought there was simply male and female? And when we get to here, we discover for the very first point in the Bible, God says gender is a specific thing. Male and female has a very specific purpose. Male and female represents the image of God. God is giving us definitions of this critical cultural controversy right now. Whatever gender differences God created in male and female are part of representing the fullness of God's image in this world. We know men and women are different, right? In equality, they're the same in the image of God. Once we pass that point, there's very little that's the same about men and women. Every place we look around us says there's real big differences between men and women. Every movie, every book, every song, every source of media, every advertisement presents men and women as different. Now those differences may be wrongly presented, they may be distorted, they may be exploited, but if there's one thing that's certain is that who you are as a man and who you are as a woman is something unique. And here we are told that there are created differences that require different words to describe them. And those created differences somehow are necessary to fully picture the fullness of what God is. Okay, now, whatever those differences are then, they are really, really important. And it's really important to get them right. because they represent God. They are the fullness of His image. Personhood in man is a human life that images God through the gender of male or female. Are you the image of God? If you believe that, then you also believe I am the image of God as a male. Or I am the image of God as a female. The image of God only comes in one of two forms. God didn't say there were 71 different representations of His nature. And so when we look at the world and there's a confusion out there, we may not be able to correct that confusion, but in your own heart, in your own mind, do you understand that there is a clear way to define gender and a very wonderful, magnificent, amazing way to define gender, and that it's a beautiful thing? It is somehow, some way, we don't want, whatever it means, we want to be right there. We want to be right in the middle of it because it represents something divine and it represents something real. And who you are as a man or who you are as a woman is a profound thing because God is there in that place. And whatever it means to accurately reflect that, that's what it means to reflect God. Male and female, human gender in Genesis, must be about something that's beyond physical or biological because the God of Genesis is not physical or biological. So when we hear this, our mind can tend to stumble and go, wait a minute. Are we Mormons? Are we saying that God's a man and a woman? I mean, is that what we're saying here? And of course that's not what we're saying, and that's not what the Bible's saying. The Bible is very clear that God is spirit. This does not relate to physical things. So to understand what's being shared here, we have to understand correctly what it means to look at the image of God in male and female. And I want to give us a couple of analogies. Well, first, here's our principle. Don't begin with human attributes to understand God. Begin with divine attributes to understand man. So we hear God is made His image in male and female. So we look at what we understand about human life in male and female, and we go, that's in God? God's going, you got it all wrong. What I'm telling you is, there's something in me that you're supposed to realize is down here. There's something in me that's down here. Don't look at yourself and figure me out. Look at me and figure you out. Don't look at yourself and figure God out. Look at God and understand yourself. That's how we're going to correctly catch this. And we do this in other areas, right? So God's not actually physically Father and Son. Jesus is not Father and Son. You know, Jesus and the Father are not really what we would call on the earth Father and Son, because what is the classic definition of Father and Son? One comes before the other, right? The Father comes first. That's the definition. The Father's first, and then He produces the Son. That's the Father-Son thing. If that's what you believe about God, you believe heresy. That is a heretical thought. The Father and the Son are co-eternal. They have always existed. So why does He call Himself the Father and the Son then? Because He's not trying to tell us something about His physical nature. He's trying to tell us something about His relational nature. It's all about His relational nature. And we hear Father, Son, and we get it. Yeah, I got it. I got that relational thing. I get it. But if we try to project what we know about Father, Son on the earth up into God, we go, oh, well, that's not going to work. That's actually heresy. God says, you look at me, I'm telling you something, and I've created a picture on the earth, and you find the relational realities of me in that picture. And I've made it so you get it with Father, Son, don't you? Yeah, you get it. You go, yeah, I get it. Well, that's what I'm after. It's not the physical thing. It's the relational thing. There's a trust and a care and a dependence and a leadership that I want you to pull out of that. church is not actually female, nor a single person. But the earthly reality of the bride and groom were created by God to give us the best picture of Christ in his church. So we are the bride of Christ. We say that all the time, and it's actually true in some spiritual sense. But if we looked at brides and grooms and on earth and go, okay, you think about bride and groom on the earth, and then take that and project it up, you go, well, that's not right. God's saying, no, no, no. I've made the picture down here, and you take the relational element out of it, and in that relational element, that's what I made for you to see and understand. It's the relational part that's what I want you to grab. And I've made a picture that when you live it out on earth, you create this relational scenario, and that relational scenario helps you understand where I'm at relationally. God is not actually male and female, but man was created as male and female to capture the best earthly picture of the complementary love that exists within God. He says it. This is his image. He could have done a lot of things, and he made this. One man, one woman. He's going to put them in relationship, and he's going to say, that is the fullness of my image. Now, again, we can maybe back up and go, I don't know, that seems a little weird to me, because I think of all this romantic stuff that goes on with men and women and what that's like. But let me just pause this here just a little bit here. First of all, this is God's thing. He said it. God is on record in a number of places as pushing our buttons. And two, are we going to say that God cannot manifest who he is in the form of a form of womanhood or the form of a woman? Could God have come in human life as a woman? Oh, absolutely he could. Absolutely he could. Now, he would not have done the things he did if he came manifested in the life of a woman, because God has different plans for what male and female represent on the earth, and that's why he came as a man, so that he could represent to us what's represented in the figure of a male. But certainly God could have come in the form of a woman. This is a little controversial. I probably shouldn't even bring it up, but one of the books I like is The Shack.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, you're probably just not old enough yet. You will like it. But one of the huge controversial things in that is that God appears as a woman. And I hope that's the controversial part, because he also appears as a black woman, and I hope that's not controversial. But people really stumble over that, like you're misrepresenting God. And I can understand how you could make that case, but we have to be careful here. How far are you going to push that? Oh, God could never appear as a woman. Oh, really? Let's just talk about that. Aren't we all the image of God? Now, God would not portray the same characteristics, and that's so later in the book he appears as a fatherly figure, and there's a real good reason in the book why that happens, and why it starts the way it does. But it puts our head someplace that it's not used to going, and we can struggle with that. But I just want you to recognize that God himself has said, this is my image. This is us. This is the selfie. This is the selfie right here. And the best way you're going to understand our love that happens up here, the best way you're going to understand it is when you, if you ever could see, a perfect marriage. That's the best. It's not exactly it. Just like any photo you have of somebody you love, you know, I've got lots of pictures of my wife, Carol. I've got some that are my favorites. And they all, you know, are not her. They're all, and if you were a painter and you painted somebody like that, they'd all be different mediums. You'd have a watercolor, but she's not watercolors. You'd have oil, but she's not oil. But she's in there. And God says he's not male and female, but in that medium is a good medium to paint him. And so is father and son, and so is king and subject, and so is a master and slave. There's a number of good media that can be used to paint the relational image within God. But he says, listen, guys, this is my best one. This is my best one. man and a woman in permanent covenant relationship, that's the best picture you're ever going to get of me. And I'm not male and female, but that's my medium, and that's my picture. That means male and female represent something very specific and very special. So if we go back to our points here, how did I get my PowerPoint messed up again? God did not pronounce his image in male and female to tell us what he is. He did it to tell us who we are. A little bit of a way to restate what we said before. But there's a couple of key words there. The first one is what. We tend to think in terms of the what's, the what's, the what's. God's not after explaining the what's, he's after explaining the who's. You guys know about how God is a who'd what? That's my favorite definition of the Trinity. Everybody heard of God's a who'd what? Who'd what, right? You guys know it, right? How many of you don't know it? All right, so it's great. It's the best one I've ever heard. It's the only one I've ever heard that makes sense to me. Okay, so my bag. And this is a what? It's a what? But you know what this isn't? This is not a who. There's no who here, only a what. Now, me, on the other hand, I'm a what. But I'm also a who. I'm a what and a who. There you go. God is a what? God's a what? But God is three who's. God is a three-who'd what? I'm a one-who'd what? Get a little Dr. Susie in here, but I'm a one-who'd what? And you're a one-who'd what? You got one who, one what? God is one what? And he's three who's. He's a three-who'd what? And that's what he really is. He's only one what? He's only one God. But he's a three-who'd what? And when he made his image, he did this, it was his thing, and I think there's reasons for it. He made it two, in one sense, we're going to see, when we get through the end of Genesis 2, how he made it two-who'd what. And he's going to say, that's my image. And there's reasons why all that can flow into even a closer picture as we think it through. But he did that with two complete equals. The thing I love about this picture is a father and a son are not really equal. They're not really equal. The son, especially as a child, he's not equal to his father. There's not a co-equalness there at all. And that's why that relationship is so natural. But two adults, equal intelligence, essentially, equal in so many different ways, equal in their ability to think things through, to understand, to have a will, to make choices. Those two equals come together in a covenant relationship of complementary love. And that's as close as it gets in the earth. And each one is necessary. We will understand this passage by looking to eternal realities, not to temporal things. And so, as we look at some conclusions here, conclusions from Genesis 1, we can all say this: I am man, you are man. Somebody's behind the times on how species should be referred to, and I'm guessing it's probably our culture, not God, but he uses the word man to describe us. Let's make man in our image. I am man, therefore God intentionally created me as male or as female. You're man, you're human, you're in God's image. So you know what? God made you one of two things. One of two things. You get to represent him. You get to express him. You get to live out divine qualities in one of two ways. He gave that to you. As male or as female. And Psalm 139, it says, "For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made." And in our world, the reason there is a lot of confusion related to gender is because often we don't feel like what we should be in these categories
fits us. We feel inadequate. We feel like we don't understand it, and we move away from it. And God says, listen, I made you for that category. I put you there. You are fearfully and wonderfully made. And you can be at peace in that place. And you see what we started with God's heart? We've got to trust His heart. In this church, there are people wrestling with their gender identity. In this church. How do we find an answer? Well, first we have to ask, is there an answer? And we go to the Bible and go, oh, there is an answer. Then I have to go, do I trust it? Can I move this way without being hurt? Without being lost? Without it not working? Can I trust God? God, God desires to know me and love me as the person He has made me, either male or female. God desires to know me and love me. And all of us have a desire to know God better. If you're a believer, it's in your heart, you want that. You know, where's God gonna draw near to you? Where's He gonna meet you? Where's He gonna sit with you? He's gonna sit with you in your identity as a man. He's gonna sit with you in your identity as a woman. That's where you're going to find Him coming close to you. That's where He's going to draw you. He wants to know you and He wants to love you there. Your relationship with God comes through your gender. Because it's what you really are, though you might not even understand it, you might want to deny it, you might not even express it anyway, but you know what? It's still true on the inside. You can't change it because it's really true. Just like you might really want to believe you don't have a kitty, but the truth is you do. It's in there. Might not see it, but it's there. You can't change that fact, and it's doing its thing. It's shaping your life. You are a man. You are a woman. That reality is shaping your life every single day. And God wants to meet you right there, and He wants to know you, and He wants to love you in that place. The Lord is faithful to all His promises and loving toward all He has made. And He's made each one of us in one of two genders. God's good plan for me will come as I walk with Him as male or female. All the days ordained for me were written before I came to be. You know, every single day between now and when you die has a good plan in it. And that good plan is to meet you and walk with you in many different ways. And one of them is through expressions of your gender. Of being a man or being a woman. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. This was our verse from the first week. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope in a future. Next, I'm a man, therefore God intentionally created me as male or female. We've already kind of drawn that out. Oh, so you went backwards. Sorry, I'm pushing my buttons wrong. I glorify God by expressing the image of God as a human being generally, and also through the gender God has given me as a man or a woman. You know, there's no other quality about me that in and of itself glorifies God. I have a little bit of brown hair left. Sort of brown. Insurance guy called a little while back. He said, you know, I was answering stuff with the phone. What color is your hair? My wife heard me answer the phone. My wife and my son, brown. They both looked at me and go, you don't have brown hair. I don't have any hair, but my brown hairedness, the fact that I'm about 5'7", 5'8", none of that glorifies God in and of itself. No quality about me glorifies God. Now, I can glorify God through it. I can somehow make it a tool through which I glorify God. It probably glorifies God more if I keep it combed and whatever. But there's one quality about me that in and of itself, it glorifies God.
I glorify God through the expression of being a man. You glorify God through the expression of being a woman. You glorify Him in that. He's glorified in it. He likes it. Now, when we hear that, for many of us, we just go, whoa, something about me just, there's just a lot of emotions that flare when that comes up. There's a lot of emotions that fire. And that's because we've all experienced a lot of hurt connected to gender, or at least very many of us have. That's why it requires faith. That's why we started week one with God's heart. God made each one of us the way He made us, and He loves us, and He wants to meet us right there and lead us into confidence in expressing that. That's why when we talked the last week about masculinity and femininity, what is God calling men to? What is God calling women to? We have to see that and go, you know, that's okay. I feel good about that. I'm okay with that. I want to find my life right there. I want to find my life right there. I want to identify myself that way. And when we do that, we are at peace with who we truly, really are. Of course, in many of those things in gender, they overlap in many ways, and some of it's hard to understand. But there are things we can grasp that help us get a general direction. I already did this. I think I just, how come I keep going backwards? Okay, last one here. God is pleased when the picture of divine character created in womanhood and that picture created in manhood are clearly distinguished, honored, aspired to, and expressed. And this is something I think the church needs to be a culture that it walks in this, even though our world won't. I remember when I was a little kid, I was taught to open doors for girls. I don't know how old I was, but pretty young. Taught to open doors for girls. Men open doors for women. And so as a young man, I was taught to open doors for girls. But somewhere around 1967, 1968, that all changed. And if you opened a door for a woman, you probably got yelled at. What do you think? I don't have any arms? You think I can't open a door? Chauvinist. And so you learned you'd never open a door for a woman. You just let it go. But what was wrong with that cultural expression? Of course a woman can open a door. What was wrong with the expression of, I understand there, even though I don't even know you, but there's something I'm going to bring that's going to protect you and that's going to provide for you. And there's something you're going to bring that's going to go, you know what, I'm okay with that. You can protect me, you can provide for me in that small, tiny little way. And so a man could bring his strength in the smallest of ways. And a woman could acknowledge, you know what, I'm happy to be provided for. And a Christian culture produces that in a safe way. Because when a man is the very safe, it's when he's asked to bring his strength. Ask a man to bring his strength, and he's probably a safe man. When a woman says to a man, I don't need your strength, it brings out everything that's on the wrong side of that guy. Great, you don't need my strength? Okay. Well, then I'll just bring some else. And that's the world we're living in today. That's the world we're living in today. So this is the very beginning, really, of the cultural stuff that our world is struggling with. Next week we'll talk about more. We'll get into marriage and sexuality, and then we'll get into gender, and we'll get into masculinity and femininity. But in all those things, you and I need to see them. We need to embrace them. We need to go, this is good for me. I'm okay with this. And then we need to look at our world, and we need to have compassion. And one of the things I wanted to ask at this point was just, how many of you guys know of scenarios or... You know, I don't know whether anybody here would even want to share anything about their own life, about just how the notion of being called into these specific identities of male and female is hard. But certainly, I know of a number of scenarios where there's just been very hard things related to gender identity that have rolled into people's lives close to me. And to understand how to support that and how to walk in that can be very challenging. And it's one of the things we can dialogue here, even in this class. So if you have any comments or questions or anything related to where we've been, we've got 10, 15 minutes here. The next 2 weeks, again, are going to be a shotgun, so if you have anything you've ever wanted to say, here's your chance. Great. I think that's a great question. And there is somebody, I shared this the first week in a church that I work with, where there's dialogue with his pastor. The guy is biological male, father to several children, but just really feels like he's a woman and wants to go be surgically changed, altered, to have his body more reflect that. How do we do that? Or we could go to other places. Like, there's lots and lots of teenagers. My goodness, anybody experience gender uncertainty when you were a teenager? What could be more difficult than to look at all the images projected at you on the movie theater and in everywhere, all around, these incredible images of, in some ways, grossly distorted masculinity and femininity, and look at yourself and go, well, I'm not that, I'm not that. I don't know what I am, but I'm not that. And I wonder, well, then what does that mean for me? Well, Facebook kindly gives me 71 choices, so I can find one. I think I'm about here. This is where faith comes in, where we go, okay, if this is my basis for truth, God's got this thing going on, and he's made his image, and he likes to see his image. He made it to be seen. He wants to watch it. He wants to watch it do all the things that he does, express his character, express his nature, to do good, express relationship. And he's done it by making male and female. So I accept by faith there is male and female. The way God had that stamp, just like father and son is stamped biologically. I am the father of four boys. I'm not the father of anybody else. It's stamped biologically. I am male because it's stamped biologically. And so this person who's wrestling with this, there's all kinds of things that can make my head go the wrong direction. So then I have to ask myself, and this was the whole point of the voices in our heads, right? I got a lot of voices in my head. The voices in my head are telling me lots of things. There's a lot of men and women that have a voice in their head that says, I love the guy next door. I love my neighbor's wife. I love my boss at work. And that's what their voices in their head are telling them. Oh, he's the right guy for you. She's the right person for you. That's the voices. And we go back to truth and we go, you know what? Voices are wrong. There's not life down that road. There's not life down that road. There's not life down that road. God says he'll meet me here. I will trust. I will walk. I will believe God will meet me here. Same thing with our gender. God says I'm male. God says I'm female. Wow. Does that not seem to fit the voices in my head? And there's lots of voices outside my head in this world saying, yeah, I think you're right. You need to roll over there. And God says, I made you male. I will meet you there. I will meet you there. So that's why we have to trust his heart. We have to know his word, and we have to make a decision. Which voices am I going to let lead my life? Now, I was a biology major, did a lot of genetic stuff. There are certain scenarios where, in just extreme rarities, somebody can have two X chromosomes and a Y chromosome. Just like human beings have two arms, but there are people born without two arms. Just like, people have two eyes, but there's people born without two eyes. There is places where in the fallenness of the world, toward the end of the genetic life of our species, there are things that don't work right. What does that mean? And there I go. I don't know if I have an understanding of that, except that I would work with that. Why would we just create relationship with that person and go, well, we know this much for sure. God loves you. God made you. He has allowed your body to not come together in a way, just like he allows people to be born with no arm or to be born in lots of broken ways. But he loves them. He's with them. And we might not always fully understand what does it mean to live out a life with only one arm or whatever, but we go, but you can do it. God's got a plan. He knew this. It didn't surprise him. It might surprise your mom and dad. It might surprise you, but it didn't surprise God. He knew this is where he was going to be walking with you in this situation. But the specifics of how gender would work for there, I'm not qualified to answer. Now, maybe people who work with that a lot kind of do have that figured out, but I don't. But that really has essentially nothing to do with what we're talking about. And then we can't let it get confused by that. Because we just like we can go, well, but yeah, but not every human being has two arms. Well, but God made man two arms, two legs. That's man. And so if someone is clearly genetically male, clearly genetically female, which is 99.99% of all human life, I go, this is where your faith goes. I can really help you. God's going to meet you here. God's going to meet you here. He's already told you that. He's told you he's going to meet you here. He told it in your biology. That's where he promised you. Because the source of truth is the voices in my head. The voices in my head is, I'm a woman. Oh, so that's the source of truth. So I need to change my body to fit the source of truth. Because there's this truth. So whenever we let the voices in our head be our source of truth, you are headed down a destructive road. Because you will destroy your life. You will utterly destroy yourself by the time you get to be my age. If what runs your life is the voices in your head.
So,
I'm not a history buff, but the little I know of history, I don't think there's ever been a time in the history of the world like this. I don't know what it means. I don't know if it's spiritual, I don't know what, but we are just, the amount of change in the last 15 years, it's been utterly, absolutely staggering. There's a lot we can say about that. God eventually is going to respond to that. And I think we need to be really loving and gracious in our culture, but the most important thing, men and women, the most important thing, men and women, is that we need to be clear as the church. We need to be at peace as the church. Nobody else can arrive at these conclusions unless they have a source of truth. The voices in their head aren't going to, and the world's not going to, so they can't get here, but you can. And you can find life in it, and you can be a light in that life. I'll tell you what, there is no greater light than living out the image of God through your gender. It's incredibly powerful to feel at peace and at home and aspiring to what God's made you to be in that way.
I just wanted to say that I think something you said earlier was really important. You said basically men and women are equal and different. And I know for my own self, since I grew up on a farm and stuff, not a girly girl. And that, before I started following God, that was hard for me to be like, well, you know, I don't feel like a woman necessarily because women are this and I'm this. You know, I'm tough. I buck hay and ride horses and drive tractors and all this stuff that seems more like men things. But when I started following God, I kind of came to the conclusion that like that isn't what being a woman is.
Yeah.
You know, this is what being a woman is, and I became so much more comfortable in my womanhood after I started following Christ because I realized that this is how I'm representing womanhood. It doesn't mean that that's how every other woman represents womanhood, because we're all unique also.
Yeah.
So I'm a woman, but I'm a unique woman. And how I represent that is okay. And so then I started becoming more comfortable about, like, yeah, hey, I'm a woman.
Yeah. That's really, really good. So it says in Proverbs 31 that she's clothed with strength and dignity. And when we talk about femininity, we talk about what is feminine strength? Because you women, just like men, all of us are called to be strong. And for you to know, here's strength for me. And it requires faith. It requires courage. It's strength. She is clothed with strength and dignity. There is a power in both of these. Wouldn't there be a power in the image of God wherever it's at? There is a power, a world-shattering power in masculinity and femininity. And it's not the stereotype. It is not the stereotype. Okay. Let me put up the assignment here. I don't know if you guys are, probably not all of you are getting to do this, but I think there's stuff really helpful here in these. Yeah.
Kurt? Yeah, just one comment that I mentioned how important it is to be clear within the church. And
despite what I said earlier in the comment, I hope to leave some time at the end of each one of these next two to talk about that, because when we get into sexuality, there'll be tons of questions that will be very germane to how does that relate to us out there in the world. And the world is going to become a more hostile place. We do not understand. We have lived in a Christian culture. What we thought was normal is not normal at all. It has never existed in history anywhere outside of a Christian influence. It exists very few places around the world. And we've gotten the benefit of defining the culture. When we don't define the culture, it is going to be a much less accepting place for us. And that change is going to be challenging. But we have to figure out what does it mean to walk in faith in that. Because it's not our culture anymore. We are now a subculture. That's why we have to know who we are. When you own the culture, you don't even have to know who you are, because everybody agrees anyway. When you're a subculture, you better know who you are, or you won't be in that subculture very long. You want to be in the church, you want to really be in the life of the church, you got to know who you are. You got to be clear. And this is one place we have to be clear. So think about this. If you got more questions, bring them up next week. Let me just pray here. Lord, thanks for letting us just have this time. I thank you for the men and the women that are in this room. Lord, I think if we just could go through every story here, oh, there's so many challenges. There's so many hard things about walking the way you want us to walk. And in this area, there's hard things too. But Lord, I pray that we would trust your heart, that we'd be willing to move toward you, that we'd be willing to say, there's life for me, living out that image, and I want to understand more of it. And I just praise you, God, for what you called us to. It's beautiful in your eyes. It will end up being that way in ours also. It's all going to end well in following you. Help us believe that, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, next week.
Last week I said, I feel like even in college, I kind of have a sense of masculinity for me coming up.